This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another PTBN Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever Pod Blast. I am JT. And what I think I said before we went on air, and I forgot the adjective. I used beautiful threesome, maybe, something like that. It's a wonderful three-way, either way. And that is because I'm here with my fellow S.H.I.E.L.D. mates, and that is, I guess we'll go in the order, alphabetical order. We'll go with Ben Morse first. Ben, how are you?
Happy to be part of what I believe is a special threesome.
Special threesome, that's what it was. Yeah. I knew it was something exciting.
No, I'm thrilled to be here, taking some... late night time to talk with my buddies about some wrestling. Always
right.
A good time.
This is a late show for you. Usually it's like 6 p.m. and done for you.
Oh, yeah. I rarely book myself into this kind of position. But, you know, for this three-way, I think you needed to do it at night.
You have to get in that kind of position when you have Greg Phillips on the line with you, too. Greg, how are you?
I'm try a lot of things, and Lingual ain't one of them.
Yes. So good. Of course,
I'm very excited to be on with the two of you, of course.
And I was going to put you both over. Ben, of course, the Kingpin over at Marvel.com. You can check out all his goodness there. And Greg Phillips, one of the spearheads of PTBN Comics, Hard Traveling Fanboys, and everything else going on over there as well. So two great guys, two great dudes. I've had the honor to meet them both over the last 2 years, which has been pretty cool. So excited to be here. And as you may have heard, we are running this project, the PTBN Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever. And we've been doing various pod blasts and everything else and written articles talking about all the different candidates. And some candidates are locks for the list. And the debate on the show is about like where they should rank. And sometimes we've been arguing, mainly Aaron George, about if guys should be even on the list. And I think tonight the guy we're talking about, I'm guessing, will be in the top 100 for many people, I would expect. But I think the question for Davey Boy Smith is where? Where on that, you know, list will he check in? So before we get to the NJPW ranking system, Greg, tell me first, like first glance, when you look at the name Davey Boy Smith, A, is he on your list? And B, like just if you had to just blurt out a spot where you expect him to wash out, where would it be?
A, yes, he's definitely on my list. And I think that when I went into this project, perhaps my initial thought would be somewhere in that maybe 50 to 60 kind of range. But that's changed a little bit after further review. And I think I'd probably ballpark figure, I think he's in the top 50 for me for sure.
And Ben, like my kiss, is Davey Boy Smith on your list as well?
Your kiss is most definitely on my list. Davey Boy Smith, right alongside it. I think he's a guy who checks all the boxes, and as we'll go through each category, we'll see how well he does. But unlike Greg, I had him on my list from the start, but the more I thought about it, the lower I went with him. I think he started out for me as being a 50-60 guy, or maybe even top 50, and when all was said and done, I think he's more of a 70s-80s guy, and I'll get into the whys and wherefores as we go on.
All right, very good. And it's interesting to me, too, because I hear a lot of people on all of these shows, the cast and the blasts. It seems like everyone on everyone's list is between, like, 60 and 80. I'm curious to see how these guys all fall. But I swear to God, like, I listen to the For Your Considerations, which are tremendous, with Steve Williams and Will and, you know, the co-hosts and guests that they've had. And I swear to God, every fucking guy they talk about is between 60 to 80. And same thing on these pod blasts. And, you know, Aaron and I were in the same thing. Me and Kelly did King Kong Monday. We said the same thing. And it's like, who the hell is going to be in the top? You know, like, who's in that 20 to 50 range for all these people?
Going to be different iterations of The Rock, Austin, and Hogan. Like Hollywood Hogan, you know, Hulk Hogan,
well, that's Nick,
et cetera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's break down the bulldog here, Ben. All right, so let's look at nuance. So that's where we factor in longevity, flexibility, and intangibles under that category. So where does he check in with you on that, Ben?
I think he does pretty well here. He's got great longevity. I mean, he debuted in, we want to say, 86 and
85.
Was 85. Mm-hmm. Debuted in 85 and was off and on with the promotion all the way through 99, 2000, missing years here and there, but definitely gets the longevity down. Evolved from a tag team wrestler to a mid-carder to flirting with the upper mid-card, flirting with the main event for a little while. And I think the biggest knock on him early on would be thinking he could only play one-dimensional babyface characters, but he proved with his heel turn in 1995 that he could play on either side of the ledger pretty well. And he was a legit main event heel. Unfortunately, he was a legit main event heel during one of the weakest times in the company's history. And he was became kind of emblematic of that. I remember on a Legends Roundtable, Jim Ross, when they were, I don't even remember what the topic was, but said something about how many times can you trot out Davey Boy Smith as a heel challenger to your babyface champion? Because he was literally like, you know, he was wrestling Diesel, he was wrestling Bret Hart, he was wrestling Shawn Michaels. It never seemed like he had a shot at sniffing the WWF title, but he was always contending for it. But I'm getting a little bit into the J of it. That's with his nuance. I think he's got a lot of skill. I mean, his intangibles are great. He's got definitely like a wrestler's demeanor. He's got the charisma. He's kind of a weirdo, which I like.
And the connection too, especially in Europe, you know, like that. I mean, that's a big part of him. He was. I know we're not really factoring in draw, but to me, like the interaction and the connection he had with the British and the European crowds, like, is a big plus for him.
Well, I would put that as an intangible. I think that's absolutely the definition of an intangible, is that he had this connection with the British crowd. But also, he gave them legitimacy as a legitimate British star, a legitimate guy who they could bank on. Like, when he won the European title, it was easy to build the European title around Davey Boy Smith because he had the credentials. So I think he does well in nuance.
He's not just weird. You might even say that he's bizarre.
Bizarre.
Yeah. Very bizarre. And his it's funny because you listed his 96 run in the main events, and you mentioned, which was a great point, that he never really felt like a legit threat. And then in 97, he doesn't really get any world title matches, but he feels more legit to me. And I don't know if that's because of the Hart Foundation stuff or what, but when you watch that like one night only pay-per-view with him and Sean, like, he feels like one of the top stars in the company at that point. So maybe it's the groundwork they laid throughout 96. I'm not sure. I'd say the only time I felt like he was a real threat was that, like, that Beware of Dog pay-per-view, the first bout with Sean, where maybe you could see them giving him the belt for a little bit because he was pretty hot. And then once they started the Diana stuff in earnest, it kind of went downhill. What do you think for a nuance for him, Greg?
I think he checks all the boxes in this category. Like Ben said, his longevity is there. His flexibility is solid because he went from one of the, if not the predominant babyface tag team of the 80s in the Bulldogs, and then he goes 10 years later and he's in the top heel team in the Federation, granted at a downtime in the tag division, but he and Owen were a really good tag team, really fun to watch. Great heels.
And they raised it up. They raised the quality up. I mean, they were that's the turning point of that division when they form an actual
Absolutely.
Team.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. Night and day from what it had been just 6 months prior.
To like a week before, so, I would say.
Yeah, a week, yeah. The Smoking Guns era, yeah. So, and he had the run with Sean in 96, which I've been revisiting a little bit recently, which is good. And maybe even a little bit better than I remembered it being because I wasn't a big fan of it at the time. And then, of course, his babyface run was tremendous throughout throughout the early 90s. Obviously, I think he's hurt a little bit maybe by his you know late 90s comeback. But I'm not really holding some of these guys' lowest lows against them. Yeah. I'm kind of giving guys a mulligan of sorts.
Especially when they're brief like his was.
Yeah. So I think he does well in the nuance category for sure.
And you know what's
– sorry, JR. I would say the one thing that – stands out for me on nuance and the way kind of what I was trying to describe before is to use a TV analogy. You guys know when there's a show that has basically the big bad of the week where they have guys who come in who, you know, this is just going to be, you know, kind of buying them time until they can get to the real villain of the season. And to me, that's what Davey Boy Smith always felt like, you know.
Yeah.
He felt like the sub boss.
Right.
He was was the Goro to Vader's Shang Tsung.
You're never going to be able to mistake him for Bret, for instance, who was always a top tier or was perceived as a top tier guy. Bulldog was in the Hart Foundation. He was Bret's heavy. And even before that, he was the guy that was like, he's the guy that Sean went through to get to Vader or whoever the next big threat was. Bret went through him to kind of bide time until he moved on to The Undertaker and then eventually Shawn. Mm-hmm. So I get what you're saying. You certainly can't have Davey, I think, in that tippy-top level of guys that you're considering for the list.
No, and I would agree. And I think one thing that helps is flexibility as well. Is, and as someone who's been watching a lot of British Bulldog matches for the Place to Be podcast, he works so well in either aspect of the team. Like, he can get beaten up as part of the heat segment, or he can make the hot tag and come in and be the power guy. He can be the speed guy. Like, he is very, before he really bulked up in that 91 run, he could work a power pace, he could work a fast pace. You know, like he was very, very flexible out there in the ring as far as what role he was in as part of the tag team. He could be the bruiser, he could be the technical guy. He was really flexible in that role. So I think that adds to his resume as well.
I agree, and I think we'll probably talk about it in one of the later categories, but I think he was a lot more integral to that team than I think history has led on. I think when you go back and you watch the footage, he was doing a lot more of the heavy lifting than people have given him credit for over the years.
Mm-hmm. Agreed, yeah. You always think it's Dynamite because everyone loved Dynamite. but Davey does. Yeah, he logs a lot of in-ring time. And the Bulldogs do wrestle an interesting style in that stretch. They don't actually get trapped in a lot of heat segments, at least in the matches we've watched, whether it's pay-per-view or MSG. They seem to control like 70% of matches usually, especially against the Dream Team. And he was in there doing a ton of the work. All right, let's move over to the J, Greg. Let's start with you, jump up factor. So any memorable peak matches, moments, storylines that you would use to prop up Davey on this list?
I mean, we need to knock out the obvious one right off the bat, which is SummerSlam 92. One of the most famous matches in company history with Bret. I think that's the match everybody thinks of. And the problem is, I think people think of that match as Davey's only great match.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But when you look at his resume, he's got a lot more going on than that. I would even go so far as to say he and Bret have a better match in December 95 at In Your House. I don't even remember if that had a subtitle, but maybe Season's Beatings or something like that.
I think that was the Coliseum tape name, but it didn't have an official name. You're right. And I agree with you 100% that one's better.
That match is – it's different. Like, they're both great, but that one's worked so much more emotionally. Like, there's so much visceral hate in that match from Bret's – and a lot of that is Bret. But Davey carries his end in that way better than he does in the 92 match.
Yeah, so it's not Bret. In SummerSlam, it's Bret carrying him, and you can see it. There, Bulldog is equal. And that match is so stiff. Some of those shots they give each other and those pile drivers and everything else and the blood – such a great match. And do you like it better too, Ben? I know you're a fan of the SummerSlam match, but
no, I've watched that pretty recently, and I like it too, pretty much because of the violence, like you guys are saying. It feels like, I think, you know, you got a good athletic contest in the SummerSlam match, which I've seen plenty of times, and you know, you have the good backstory between the two brothers who are both good guys, but I think it adds something and really shows off Davey Blaine being able to play the heel. In the Season's Beatings match. I also want to point to another match that he had with another family member. If you guys remember his European Championship tournament final with Owen Hart, just an incredible match. To me, I even put that maybe a tick above his SummerSlam 92 match, just a technical clinic, and him and Owen just go out and just, they know each other so well. And Davey just playing the brilliant face role and the reversals and the counters. It's really nice to watch. But I would be more curious to see, for jump up factor, how Davey does when he's not in there with a solid technician like a Bret or an Owen.
I got one.
Well, go ahead.
His feud with the Warlord. he had like 3-star matches with the fucking Warlord in 1991, and he's carrying them. I mean, to me, Warlord's like one of the biggest stiffs in wrestling, especially as a singles guy. And Bulldog is out there working his fucking ass off, like WrestleMania 7 and Tuesday in Texas. They had good matches. I'm sorry, Ben. Go ahead. I got excited.
No. I think those are like the last vestiges of British Bulldogs, Davey Boy Smith, like kind of still in his 80s tag team phase, carrying Warlord and last night. I think the series I think of that hurts Bulldog, and you guys can feel free to agree or disagree, is his series with Diesel. Mm. Because that was his first shot at being a legitimate main eventer. And you could argue if he had had better matches with Diesel, or if he had looked more legitimate against Diesel, he would have become a fixture on the main event scene instead of just an also-ran. So that, to me, hurts him, especially when you're considering jump up.
Can you pin that on him? Because looking at the time, like he gets Diesel at the last dregs of that title run where everyone is so sick of him. We've watched him fight Sid and Tatanka and Mabel. You know, it's like everyone is so fucking done with Diesel by that point. And you throw Bulldog out there you give them 20 minutes with an awful finish because it's just feeding, you're just wasting time until you get to Brett. Now, could he have delivered a better match? I mean, that's like a one-star match. Yes, for sure. But I don't know. I feel like so much was working against him in that match.
And at the same time, you know, it's hard for me to pin that on him because other than Brett and Sean, and to an extent, Razor, not many people got much out of Diesel in terms of match quality. Yeah. I mean, you might have a 2-star match with him or something like that, but you weren't going to be going out there and I don't think Davey was on that level of a guy that could carry someone like his Nash needed specific opponents to work to his style, I think Davey working that power style wasn't conducive.
But not to cut you off, Rick, but isn't that the whole point of the argument we're making here? Mm-hmm. Is that if he's to be a top 50 guy, if he's to be a credible guy, he needs to be the kind of guy who can carry Kevin Nash to more than a 1-star match. If he's given this great opportunity, you know, I talked in a podcast I did with Aaron George a couple days ago. We talked about Matt Hardy and how he was a great wrestler, this and that. But every time he was given the opportunity to become something more, he couldn't cut the mustard. And I got to say, I think it's the same thing with Bulldog.
Did they fight again, though? Did him and Diesel ever fight again? That was it, right?
That was it. They were one and done.
I don't know. I feel like I'd need to see more. Because I feel like he does. I mean, I feel like those matches with Sean, he's holding his own in 96.
Yeah.
And I think it did, in a way, indirectly set him up for main event level status. Because even if you watch International Incident, he plays a big role in that six-man, too, which is a great match. I don't know. I feel like even SummerSlam with Sid isn't bad, like considering what it is.
I think that's a better match than certainly I remembered it being, and certainly better than most of Sid's outings at the time. I think also, like, for me, I don't think you have to be able to do that to be a top 50 guy. To be a top 20 guy, sure, but I don't know that I can think of 50 guys that were capable of going out and carrying Kevin Nash to great matches.
That's a fair point. A fair point.
Especially in the fall of 95.
He's
got the Furnace and LaFon stuff, too, which is all very, very good tag stuff.
Other thing about Davey is we're all talking – the one thing that maybe is a knock against him is everything we're talking about is matches.
Right.
When it comes to actual moments, other than SummerSlam 92, there's not a lot there that I can think of. What about you guys?
I mean, I'll put the European title win back in there as another great moment. I think the inaugural European champion thing is something special. But no, I agree with you, Greg. I think he's definitely a guy who
I got one
in the ring with great work. Oh, go ahead.
Dream Team. Having just watched that entire feud, and as Glenn Butler and his brother Scott will back me up. No, it was really well done, that whole build, where they had vowed they would never, you know, they wouldn't wrestle in the U.S. if they couldn't be the Dream Team because they didn't feel that they could hang, and they bring in Ozzy Osbourne, and they have to have the second referee because all the matches have been out of control, and they finally get the big win. And that match, to me, is another one on his resume. He worked a big portion of that match. It's an awesome moment in storyline. So I would put that in his box as well as a great story.
If he had gone over as I think the original plan was at One Night Only, I think that could have been on this list. But
absolutely,
we'll never know.
No.
And he's part of Canadian Stampede too. Like, this is all shit he's involved in. And, you know, he's in the upper. Would you put him name value wise in that match in the top four? I would. I'd say Brett, Austin, Owen, and him were probably the top four guys in that match, name-wise.
Ooh, LOD. I don't know.
LOD.
In 97?
Shamrock was pretty hot. I don't know.
I definitely put him ahead of Goldust and Shamrock at that time.
Yeah, fair.
I mean, whenever you looked at the Hart Foundation, which was the hottest act in 1997 TV, he was one of the top three. It was him, Brett, and Owen, right? I mean, those were always the guys. You didn't think much about Anvil and Pillman. They were kind of always in the background. I don't know. The more I talk about it, I think the more he did have. I mean, the Hart Foundation to me has to count for a storyline for him, right? I mean, that has to. He was a major part of that whole angle. He was a part of the straw that stirred the drink with the whole him and Owen were going to split up, and then they hug Brett, and that becomes the Hart Foundation.
Yeah.
And they have the great match with Austin and Michaels on Raw to win the titles. I mean, to lose the titles to Austin and Michaels, like, that was a great match too. And
Does he get credit for also being the victim of the best people's elbow of all time?
The sliding shoes, or I guess it's negated by the dog shit rock bottom that he gets thrown into the pile of shit. All right, let's talk about, I mean, this is a spot now where he may slump, you know, depending on how you value promo skills, Ben. But what do you think of the promo skills and character work?
I mean, character work, I don't think he's that far off. Like I said, he played a credible babyface. He played a credible heel. No one's going to mistake Davey Boy Smith for an all-time promo. And I don't think we can name many promos other than the Because I'm Bizarre promo that stand out as like vintage British Bulldog promos. But, you know, he always had someone else to talk for him. Mm-hmm. Whether it was Dynamite isn't exactly the most dynamic talker either. So
no, you know, they had Albano, I think, too.
They had Albano. Then he didn't talk much as a solo babyface. And then, you know, with the Hart Foundation stuff, he was not one of the main guys speaking. But at the same time, he could stand in the background and look menacing,
right,
which is a skill in of itself. And I would argue, like, going back to your giving him credit for the Hart Foundation times, I think he played his role beautifully as the heavy. And he wasn't there to be the talker. They had Brett, they had Owen, they had Pillman, but you had two heavies. They were Neidhart and Davey Boy, and Davey Boy played his part to the T.
And I think a couple of the memorable moments that we didn't mention, when he murdered guys with chair shots on Raw in 1997, he destroys Ken Shamrock with one, and he destroys Mankind with one as well. And my other favorite promo from him is WrestleMania 7, where he talks to Winston before the match with the Warlord. That's a good one. But anyway, I think character-wise, he worked. He was a, you know, as a face, he was a noble British wrestler who came out. He carried himself with a good air about him. He looked his size. You know what I mean? Like, he wrestled his size. He didn't feel like a big muscled-up guy that was lumbering or off, you know, whatever, just off his rocker at all. He always seemed on point and kind of knew what he was doing. He wasn't the best promo. So what do you think, Greg?
I think he was passable is the best I can say for him as a promo. But like you guys said, he played the character. He had this kind of naive charisma about him. And it's a weird intangible. But when he was a babyface, you just kind of liked him because he seemed like this big, almost goofy kind of guy.
Yeah.
And he even carried that goofiness over into his heel run. By the time he joined up with Owen, it was just this I don't know. There was just this joy about watching him work that he had. So while I don't think he was a good promo, I don't think he was a terrible promo most of the time. I don't think he was Dynamite level bad, because Dynamite was pretty rotten on the mic.
Right.
And so I, you know, passable is all I can say for Davey.
I think he's not a great promo, but he is a great character.
Yeah.
It's basically what we can boil it down to. And I think what you're saying, I think he's one of those guys who he let his real-life personality shine through. And his real-life personality is that he was a goofy prankster. You know, we always hear stories about how he was, you know, pulling pranks backstage, him and Owen having fun and, like, goofing around. And I think that was when he was at his best, when he got to show off his goofy side. And maybe why he worked so well as a heel, despite all signs pointing to him not being able to be a heel. I mean, when he turned heel in 95, this was a guy who we had only ever seen as a babyface, who had not shown really even a mean streak as a babyface, but he works as a credible heel, and I think that goes back to the character portion of the evaluation.
Yeah, and unfortunately, all of his best promos were cut either backstage or in the ring with his opponent, such as "I'm fooked, Brett," or "They fooked him."
And another great one too is, it wasn't even a promo, I think it was Revenge of the Taker, where him and Owen go in the back and beat someone up, and they realize they're on camera and they do the double take. Just stuff like that was so good. And I think there's something to be said too, and I guess this can transition us to the work rate category. But once he turned heel, and I'm kind of getting more and more into it now because we're into 95, Scott and I looking at these Raws, he definitely becomes a weekly, or at least bi-weekly, Raw workhorse. You know, like, it's a guy like IRS, like we see in 93, just out there every week or every other week, and he gets, like, the long matches. And I feel like Bulldog, just anecdotally, I remember him being in a lot of Tomorrow Night on Raw, you know, Undertaker takes on British Bulldog. Like, he was in, like, a lot of name matches and get a lot of run on Raw.
Sure.
And another memorable one, too, I'd give him, I guess it may be more Sean than him, but the Rumble 95 stuff where he was the first, second guy in, gets thrown out at the end, should have won the match. Sean, you know, snuck out the win. And then they have a rematch And they don't really go anywhere with it after because they stick him in the Allied Powers. But that's, I think that's a pretty memorable moment for him.
Oh, we haven't even mentioned the Allied Powers.
Probably for the best. All right. Greg, what do you think of his work rate?
Oh, my gosh. This, to me, is the category of his that has increased the most in my eyes thanks to the WWE Network, actually. Because before the network came along, I had my memories of Davey, and they were good memories. But I also remembered a lot of the bad, the Diesel match, him kind of having to get carried in most of his great singles outings. And because the Bulldogs were kind of at the very hazy beginning of my wrestling fandom. I barely remember the Bulldogs, like, as an actual fan. So going back to watch their stuff, I've been really impressed, especially after Dynamite's injury in 87, I think it is, or end of 86. Dynamite was so limited after that. And if you go and you watch the Bulldogs matches in 87 and 88, I thought what I was going to find was bad matches because Dynamite couldn't work like he did before. And instead, yeah, there's some boring ones, but Davey is in there doing yeoman's work, like carrying the load of what Dynamite used to be, doing a lot of the complex sequences that Dynamite used to do, the crisscrosses, the leapfrogs, the arm drags and the chain wrestling and things like that. Davey's really good in those matches, and if you just watch his performance, his body movement, his work rate, his work ethic, how quick and how crispy he is with his moves, it's very impressive. And I would go so far as to say he was the better worker on the team by the end of their run. Certainly not at the beginning, but by 88, 87, he was the best worker out of the two, and he was putting on really good matches. And I think he carried that through into his solo run and had ebbs and flows here and there. And even in his tag team with Owen, that was a 50-50 tag team. Owen brought his elements, Davey brought his elements, and they meshed perfectly together. So work rate-wise, I think he's a sneaky, you know, if we're just looking at work rate rating, he's a sneaky, you know, top 40, top 30 kind of guy. Really impressive worker, in my opinion.
And there's a match on Saturday's main event where Dynamite's hurt right after WrestleMania 2. He hurt his knee. And it's a 2 out of 3 falls with Volkov and Sheik, and Davey wrestles the entire match, and it's really good. You know, he was really good.
Yeah, I just watched that.
Yeah, and just like you were saying, Greg, you know, right to your point, that he ends up doing a lot of work post WrestleMania 2 and then definitely into 87 when Dynamite's just all banged up.
Yeah, I mean, he's a superlative work rate guy. I don't think there's any question. Great tag team wrestler in two very different tag teams, as Greg already pointed out. Not a lot of lousy matches, and the impressive thing to me is he's a big guy and a big muscled up guy, and let's call a spade, a big roided up guy who could really move and who could be believable in the ring. He didn't lumber. He didn't carry himself like a giant. He was able to really move. He could do, you know, flips. He could do technical holds, and he had a really solid background. And I think work rate, I agree with you, Greg. This is the category that really boosts him up for me. I've already kind of said, like, the categories that bring him down for me is not that he can't work a match. It's that he wasn't able to jump up to the main event. But he's not going to lose any points on work rate.
All right. Well, that tells a story on Davey Boy Smith. We'll see where this all shakes out, where he ends up on the list. Again, I mean, we all have him ranked. It's just a matter of maybe 60 and 80. No, but I mean, it sounds like, Ben, that's maybe where you are, and Greg and I, just a tad higher. I think it really matters how much you think the promo and the ability to not be into the main event scene hurts his case. I mean, I guess what it comes down to is how many guys do you have at that main event level, and then where does he check in at the next tier? So, I mean, I would say 40 to 60 probably in there seems right to me for the British Bulldog. So any final thoughts, Greg?
No, I just I'm happy to hear the different perspectives on Davey. I think he's a guy who doesn't get enough talk about his career, both positively and negatively. He's kind of oftentimes forgotten in the discussion of Brett and Owen and Sean and some of the other stars of that era.
Yeah, agreed, Greg. Really good point. I think he's a guy who had definitely a hearty career, some great matches, some memorable moments, and yeah, I'm glad we spent some time talking about him tonight. It feels good.
And I think it's a guy, too, that never really had... I mean, if you're going to pretty much just toss out that 99 blip, I mean, whatever, if you want to count it against, you can. But in his main run from 85 till 97, never really had a downtime. I mean, just never really had a sequence or a time period where he was just slumming through bad matches and feuds. Even with that Diesel match, he bounces out of it pretty quick by Survivor Series and into In Your House 5. So, I mean, he never really has that slide down the card or that slide in, with shit matches and angles. So I think that, that helps him, too. So there you go. That is Davey Boy Smith. Of course, keep tuned in to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling podcast feed for many other podcasts and podcasts about the Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever project. You can find more information about it at PlaceToBeNation.com or our social media. And be sure to get in on it as well. Contribute to the conversation or submit your own list. So for Greg, for Ben, the Shield is out. We'll talk to you very soon.
The imitation zone. Forget it, brother. You can go in alone.